The world of social media can be a lot of fun and useful, but with the news of government data collection and security breaches, you wonder if your information is ever really truly private when you're on social media or even cell phones and other devices. Don Stanley, a faculty associate in Life Sciences Communication Department at the UW-Madison, teaches social media and web courses. He also owns 3 Rhino Media. It's a social web and strategy business. And been with us a few times, Don. Great to have you back.
Absolutely great to be back. Thank you, Larry.
Really appreciate it. The leaks about the National Security Administration's collection of data and wiretapping have a lot of people thinking. Mm-hmm. And then with news of a large Facebook data breach, many of us, you wonder whether we really have any privacy at all online or when using our mobile devices.
What's
your take?
Yeah, that is one of those. It's I think in a lot of ways it's the world that we live in. And somebody had pointed out to me, I was talking to somebody who's in law enforcement, and they said, you know, even without cell phones and even without social media, you're still getting tracked with your uses of debit cards and credit cards wherever you're going and being monitored. So it's a very, very different world, you know, kind of George Orwellian in many senses. There's good that goes with these technologies, but there's also not so good that goes with them.
Yeah, there's a lot. And assuming that nothing is reliably private, let's put it at least. What should we keep in mind about how we use social media?
Well, I think some of the biggest things to keep in mind with social media is to be really cognizant of privacy settings, whichever tool you're using, and being aware of what the options are with privacy. But also, for example, as a parent, knowing that, yes, I want to share information about my family, but I also need to be very cautious about what I'm sharing, how much detail I'm giving out about where I live and where my kids go to school and where we like to shop and where we're checking. And all of those things are little details that you can pay attention to if you're using social media tools, in particular Facebook in this case, and just essentially being smart about and thinking through some of those things that, you know, you want to be safe. Well, I think I've mentioned on a previous show, one of my favorite websites that I talk about in my classes is a site. It's called Come Rob Me or Please Rob Me. And and what it is, it's a site set up by a former bad guy. And what it does is it exposes people's content to show them how much information they're sharing so that somebody who does have criminal intent can monitor and know when you're not home so they can come take everything and leave. So it's meant to open people's eyes to the fact that a lot of what we share, we think we might be sharing it with a small audience, but there's a lot of people who are potentially eavesdropping. So, you know, be careful what you're talking about.
Don Stanley, our guest today, he is a social media expert, and great to have him along to talk about social media and privacy issues. Do you use social media? Why or why not? You on my Facebook page, for example? What platforms do you use? And for what? Maybe how do the different social media options suit what your needs and wants are? What have you noticed about how you and friends and family use social media? Has it been a positive or a negative trend? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org with a question, or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. It's the Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. So give us a call, send us an email, or go on, post on my Facebook page. You know, boy, that's something we never did.
It's amazing.
Not that many years ago. And some people are happy with it, and some people aren't.
Yep. I have family members who are, you know, what we would call laggards, diffusion of innovation scales, and they will not touch something with a computer in it unless they have to, like a car. And then other folks, and I think, you know, who are anything that comes out, they're jumping on and they're testing and playing with. And I think that's a pretty common occurrence across our great land.
We had a Facebook question from the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology at UW-Madison. How can we provide helpful content to our social media audience, includes patients, community members, and worldwide stakeholders in women's health, when HIPAA privacy policies and other legalities make it difficult or impossible to discuss specific medical cases or give direct medical advice. Any experience working with social media strategies in the medical field?
Absolutely. And that's a great question. I actually was just presenting to one of our counties yesterday, a specific just for an individual county. And it's interesting, the different departments within the county had questions about what they could and could not post up and how they could potentially use social. And just like any other good communication strategy, the first thing that you need to think about is who you really want to cater to. And seeing the list of folks, patients, community members, worldwide stakeholders, and women's health is a lot of times when people are using social from an organizational, nonprofit, or business standpoint, they try to communicate to too many people or too many audiences, I should say, rather than the narrow casting and getting specific. And the example that I like to often give is, you know, now it's getting farther back, but about 30 years ago, there weren't that many television stations that we had to choose from. You had captive audiences, and so you could have a large quote-unquote market share or a large audience watching your show. Now, you know, there's how many?
hundreds.
And so the idea is that there are so many choices available that we as a society have come to expect very targeted, narrow, niched content that speaks directly to us. And so a good market share today would have been horrible 30 years ago. The point of that is that, you know, you should look at the different channels and figure out who are your most important audiences and what types of content can you provide to them. In this case, where you've got medical content that you have to be cautious about what you're sharing, is you can provide top level big questions and answer information, and then let people know if they need to ask something more specific, what steps they should take. And so you'll see that with a lot of organizations that will say, this is too specific of a question, we can't answer it. You can reach us by calling us at here or talking to your medical professional, but we can't advise on that. And so it's basically like when you're talking to that specific audience, what are the top level questions? Almost like a frequently asked questions type strategy is what I'll start a lot of our clients out with and what I teach my students as well. So thinking like that and realizing, okay, this is what we can do in this open format. This is the type of information we can share, and there's stuff we can't. And so just let people know when that discussion needs to go offline or when they need to consult with somebody on a more individualized basis.
Lexi in Northeast Wisconsin, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
What's on your mind? I'm sorry.
What's on my mind?
Yeah.
Okay, so regarding the Facebooks, which I, farce books is what I call it. It's just kind of like, I don't know, I have multiple opinions on that. Pretty much regarding that, it kind of is just an opinion pit for people to share their, it's just a big mess. But my question mainly is, somebody stated earlier that criminals can get, or what was the statement, that there's a website about criminals can go in and use your information to later go in and rob your house based on the information you post on Facebook. That's messed up.
Well, it's actually on a lot of, not just Facebook. It's a multitude of
Amazon.com, and they can go in and see what you ordered and like get into your personal information. I have a question about storing information on the cloud too.
Okay.
Is that secure?
It depends. One of the things, if you're looking, storing on the cloud essentially means that you are, instead of having a physical computer or device where all of your photos or email addresses or contacts are, you're paying a company to use a part of their computer somewhere out in cyberspace that's out in the quote unquote cloud that you can theoretically then access from anywhere in the world. So if you leave home and you left your computer at home and you're in Florida and you want to see all of your information on your home computer, you can use the cloud for that. Cloud services, in my experience, I'm not an expert on them, but cloud services, it's, you know, paying attention to the organization that you'd be purchasing from is really important. It's like, you know, from working with any other business, if you're going to a mechanic, you want to check references, you want to look, see if there's any types of accreditation that they have to make sure that they're good and secure. But anything online, and this is one of the things that sometimes really frustrates and makes me nervous, has the capacity, as we saw with this NSA leak to be accessed by by people in some way. If people are determined enough, they're going to try to find a breach in it to try to break in some way, shape, or form. So there's nothing that's 100% secure in terms of you know, being online. That being said, I always try to remind myself, you know, leaving my home every day isn't secure either. You know, I don't know if I'm, you know, there might be a car, there might be somebody texting and driving, there might be, you know, so you don't want to hide in a corner in the fetal position, you know, and be really, really nervous about everything. But you do want to be cautious. So the example with the Facebook, Lexi, is you want to make sure that if you're using Facebook, you have you understand the privacy settings and go into the privacy settings and make sure you have them at the maximum level that you want to have them. And so the challenge with a lot of these social media tools is they put the onus on you increasing the privacy rather than you decreasing your privacy or security settings. So you have to know that going in and setting up the account to make sure it's secure is something that you have to pay attention to.
So you need to educate yourself a bit on how do you educate yourself on something like that?
A lot of times what I'll do is I go to what I call the site of all light, truth, and knowledge is Google. And then what I'll look for is credible sources. I'll look for credible sources from educational institutions. A lot of times there's organizations that are dedicated to privacy or online privacy. And Pew Internet is one that I'll often look to for resources. The Poynter Institute's another one that will do things on web and web security. And I'll look to those for information. And then I'll also read through the privacy. It's very common that people will set up something like a Facebook account and they'll just click next, click next, click next. And then you're always presented with this long, what's called end user license agreement, which nobody ever reads.
No.
But I do make sure that I go in and always recommend reading at least the privacy policy or doing a quick search for things to be cautious about with Facebook and maximizing privacy. And a lot of times you'll find really good information through the web searches, just general web searches on what you can do to make sure that you're safe. And that's very helpful for people who are new to it because it can be an overwhelming amount of information. And the good news is there's a lot of good people out there as well who will share information and teach you how to be secure online.
And there's and Lexi's right in part. I look at my own Facebook page, my private personal page, and there's a lot of stuff coming.
Yes, yeah.
When you have I don't know how many hundreds.
Absolutely, yeah. It's difficult. It is not easy, and I often you know think about with my students. I'll talk about this about the challenge that they have growing up with this technology, where you know it's there, and whether or not they like it, you know, stuff that we would have talked about with our friends as teenagers or as kids, you know, they have to be much more cautious because once it's out there, it's
there.
Potentially out there. Exactly right.
Don Stanley, faculty associate in the Department of Life Sciences Communication at UW-Madison, our guest today. He'll be with us right up until 12:30. Well, just a few years ago, the words social media would have generated a lot of blank stares, frankly, but today many of us use and enjoy staying in touch with friends and family through sites like Facebook or following the news and other hot topics on blogs and Twitter. But are we sacrificing privacy to be connected? And how do we keep track of what our kids are up to? Hi, Larry Mueller here. Don Stanley, my guest. He's a faculty associate in the Department of Life Sciences Communication at UW-Madison. He teaches social media and web courses. He's also the owner of 3 Rhino Media, a social web and strategy business. And Don, thanks again for spending time with us.
Absolutely. A pleasure to be here.
Appreciate it very much. You may have a question for him about social media. Do you use it? Why or why not? Did you start using it and quit Facebook, for example, and then have to get back on it later? You know, there are all kinds of circumstances that might be interesting to hear about. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And, of course, we're looking forward to hearing from you. We had a Facebook comment from Marilyn. Mm-hmm. Said recently I got a Facebook post that seemed to be a game that wanted everyone to list their city of birth. Mm-hmm. Anything that asks for information that should not be shared is dangerous.
I am in the same boat. Yes, I definitely agree. Well, it's interesting. One of the most popular activities online is gaming. And so Farmville was the big game a couple of years ago where, you know, everybody is trying to get their friends through social sharing, which is what the game development companies want you to do, to share it with your friends. And, you know, one of the things I always tell people is to step back and say, well, why would they want to make their game available for free? And think about, you know, what information they might be collecting. So I get that. I get solicited a lot from family and friends to, you know, join this game or join that game. And more 99.999% of the time, I don't.
It's just not a good idea.
I, you know, again, an exercise caution. And, you know, you think about, you know, if they're asking for information, as Marilyn points out, of, you know, the city of where you were born, you know, why would they need that? And
what about we sort of got into it a little earlier. Sorry, somebody mentioned teenagers and young kids, young people are. What are the trends in the social media area with teens?
It's interesting that the data, again, this is from a Pew Internet study, shows that teens are actually getting more cautious when using social. They're getting more savvy about privacy and actually are doing a pretty decent job, better than most of us would probably give them credit for. According to the stats, 94% of American teens do have a Facebook account. So, I mean, that's a lot.
Oh my goodness.
Getting 94% of teens to do anything is pretty crazy. But they're also, like I said, being more cautious. The analogy that a lot of people are using is they're seeing Facebook as a family reunion rather than a private party. And so they're being more sensitive to the information that they post and what they put up. And that's something I think is really important if your kids are on social or getting to the age where they're going to be on, is whether or not we like it, it's here, and to start educating them and making them literate about what to do and what not to do and sharing the good sides of it as well as the not so goods. And one of the interesting things that we're seeing is a trend of teens using more and more different social tools. Instagram was one, and Instagram is a photo sharing and editing site that spiked in popularity with teens. And it's kind of leveled off a little bit as it got more popular with the adults. It, you know, became the family reunion type deal as well. But we've seen a doubling of the number of teens using Twitter in the last year. And then we're seeing a lot of the private networks becoming popular. And private networks, Path is one example, and Feed, which is PHEED, is another. And those are kind of the antithesis to Facebook. They limit the number of friends that you can have, and they're very clear with what their data collection policies are, which are almost the opposite of Facebook. They're not going to collect anything. You usually, for some of these tools, you'll pay a small subscription fee, which is how the company makes their money, rather than selling your information to advertisers. And so Tumblr is another one that's becoming popular. And one of the reasons that Tumblr, which is a quote-unquote a microblogging site, is they have really good mobile experiences, meaning that it's easy to use on a mobile device. And teens, is, you know, we can guess with smartphones and tablets and iPads are mobile a lot of times.
Yeah.
So being able to access those is pretty...
So you're talking Twitter is microblogging?
Tumblr is another one that's really common. And there's a couple of other ones that are out there, but those are some of the big ones. Feed, PHEED, is another one that's a microblogging site.
And Twitter is I actually... Have used it a little bit, but not a lot. But there are opportunities there for even having some good business.
Oh, absolutely! Twitter is a phenomenal. When I do a lot of work in my coursework with nonprofit organizations and agencies that are looking for help finding how to use social, and one of the benefits of Twitter is the number of people who are on it is pretty high. There's 140 million accounts. Now, that doesn't mean all those accounts are active, but a lot of people who are fairly prominent are on. And so one of the nice things is that because of the way it is set up, I think of it as like a social gathering where you're a networking event, so to speak, where you're not going to get into really necessarily deep conversations because you're limited to 140 characters, but you can find lots of people who will respond to you. So as a quick example, I know a couple of kindergarten and first grade classrooms where the teachers are using Twitter or were using Twitter to correspond with the authors of various books that their kids were reading. And, you know, 5-10 years ago, they would not have had access to those authors. So these children are getting an opportunity to directly access and interact and connect with authors and ask them questions and share information back and forth. I actually do that in my courses where we have literally done Twitter chats with people all over the world who are joining my class to have discussions with the students who are authors, who are top experts from literally fields all over the world. And a lot of times, my favorite story is actually of a neuroscience student that I had in my class. And he was looking at trying to write a grant, and he was unsure on how to do it. So he had started using Twitter and started following a number of prominent neuroscientists worldwide and started to share their information through his Twitter account with his followers, because you have followers on Twitter, and started commenting back and forth with them, and these top neuroscientists responded to him. And so he was really impressed, and he tweeted out one day that he was struggling with writing a grant and he needed help. And sure enough, one gentleman who was in England, and I forget what country the other was in, said, "Oh, we've got years of experience with that, and you know, we'll help you with it." You know, so he ended up getting some phenomenal interaction. I actually have another student who was featured in Scientific American magazine, and a lot of the ways that she was found by Scientific American was based off of her reaching out and making connections via Twitter.
Wow! So a chance to become prominent.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing is what you find is a lot of the people who are prominent names who are using a tool like Twitter are very accessible. And the prominent names, you know, it's dependent on the industry. So, for example, in the nonprofit industry, there's a woman whose name is Beth Cantor, and she is very, very well known for teaching nonprofit organizations on how to use social media. And if you reach out to her via Twitter versus other channels, she's very, very responsive. So here's this woman who travels around the world speaking about the books that she's written and the tips and advice, you know, working with huge nonprofit organizations, and she'll respond to tiny nonprofits in rural Wisconsin that I've worked with and helped out, which is really neat. And that's the type of thing with social that I do really love, is that you get to interact with people who have shared causes or shared interests and in ways that you weren't able to, 10, 15 years ago.
Don Stanley, our guest today, faculty associate in life sciences communication, an expert on social media. He teaches classes on it. He's also the owner of 3 Rhino Media, social web and strategy business. You can join in with your questions or comments, or maybe your experiences with social media. Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Just to take it a little further with the businesses and the nonprofits and the small ones, and probably a lot of them haven't really gotten started. What's the best way to kind of get started?
Well, the interesting thing is with that is a lot of people make the assumption that everybody is using it. And I get to travel around and speak quite a bit. And I see that, my own personal anecdotal experience, that's not necessarily true. But there are some data that came out last fall that 55% of American small businesses and nonprofit organizations don't even have a website. Which is shocking, you know, not just social media, but a website. And so what I always tell people is when you're starting with social, there's so many options that it can be overwhelming, is to think about what it is that you want to do. I mean, it's really basic stuff. Oh. Think about what it is that you want to do, and then there are 5 main social media tools that I'll generally have clients or customers look at: Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and Google Plus. So Pinterest is sometimes in that mix too. So six of them. And when they start to decide who it is they're trying to connect with and what it is they're trying to do, select the network that's going to best allow for that. In an ideal scenario, you're on every network and you can help everybody out. But the reality is,
most people.
Yeah. No. If you're going to do it, you can't do it well either. So finding out where your audience or customer is, the person you're trying to help, and then being engaged in that arena. And yesterday when I was giving this presentation, a lot of times when I'm working with government organizations or nonprofit organizations, they'll say, our audience really isn't on this, or, we don't have the time for it. And if you look in July of last year, according to Nielsen, Americans spent 121 billion minutes on social media, which is equivalent to 230,000 years of time. And so, virtually every audience is using it. So, you don't, again, have to be on everything, but know that they are there. And there are ways that you can share information once you sit back and think about the goal is not to become a technical whiz. The goal is to help the people you're trying to serve.
Yeah.
And virtually every age range and every demographic is using the web in some way. So looking at that.
Mary Beth in Oconomowoc, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Don. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
You bet.
One of the things that bothers me on Facebook is how many wonderful stories are passed along by people and liked and shared. And I spend a lot of time trying to verify whether there's any truth to them. And then in the course of conversation, I'll hear somebody say, did you know that blah, blah, blah. How can you go about finding out whether there's truth behind some of these things?
That is a fantastic point, that the rumor mill starts and wildfire spreads and, what's truth and what's not. And one of the interesting stats that I just heard was about radio and television, that people in disaster or news situations will turn to traditional radio stations and mm-hmm. traditional news stations to get information verified. And so that's really one of the absolute best ways to do it is to mm-hmm. look at those, like, for example, with this show, the Wisconsin Public Radio official accounts is to turn to those for your information rather than just relying on stuff that you heard that somebody said about this, that somebody else said about mm-hmm. this, and, not
there, And there is a site, or there are more than one site that you can go on if you say, is this really true or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't remember mm-hmm. the name of it, but I, yes.
Snopes.com.
That's
Snopes,
one of them, yes.
That's one of them, yeah.
Yep.
All right, thanks, Mary Beth. Appreciate it.
A great point, yes.
Bill in Winneconnie, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill. Hi, how are you? Great program. I've just come in, so you may have discussed this. A question first. A comment. I've been involved in nonprofits up until about 10 years ago in both management and not consulting, but on boards. And I'm really out of working on my own stuff. I try not to be inundated, as you probably can tell from my way I'm talking. I am. I haven't been able to really keep up with how to use Twitter to either do consulting or to put myself out there for possible mm-hmm. consulting roles. And I'm not. This is not to make money. It's really to build up some experience and kind of get back in the game mm-hmm. A bit. What's the best way to start, aside from Twitter and you?
There's a couple of things, and you already mentioned them, is you're thinking about how you want to use it and why you want to use it. So, looking mm-hmm. to build a network with people and to let people know who it is you are and what it is you do. And this is no different than going to a job fair or going to a career fair or something like that. So the mm-hmm. two things that I would recommend you do, one would be to start investigating LinkedIn as a place to build a social profile. So LinkedIn is
LinkedIn
is considered kind of the professional social network. It's amazingly powerful. It's way undervalued by the vast majority of people. But one of the great things on LinkedIn is there's over 1 million groups. And a group basically is people saying, I have a shared interest in this area and I want to interact with other people who have a shared interest in this area. So there are great groups on nonprofits there and nonprofits based on state, nonprofits based on type. We do a lot of pro bono work with veterans groups as an example.
Uh-huh.
And so there's veterans groups within there. So you can really start interacting and engaging in there, asking questions or answering questions based off of your experience. Because a lot of times people will post a question saying, I don't know how to do blank. Does anybody know how to do it? And you can start inserting yourself in and answering those questions and starting to build some visibility. So that's one. Neil Schaefer I'm trying to remember how to spell his last name. There's so many ways to spell Schaefer.
Neil, I live in Wisconsin. I know there are 19 ways.
Exactly.
Schaefer, yeah.
But Neil Schaefer, he's with Maximize, Windmill Marketing out in LA, and he has a great free ebook, 30 minutes to maximizing your LinkedIn profile. It's a great beginner's guide. We actually use it as a required reading in one of my classes, and it's a great price. Like I said, it's free, so that's one place I would start.
Mm-hmm.
The other, as far as Twitter, there is a fantastic book by another gentleman named Mark Schaefer, and it's spelled different, called The Tao of Twitter, T-A-O of Twitter. The Tao of Twitter. It's a simple, thin book, incredibly invaluable. It helped me tremendously when I was starting to use Twitter in my business. It's also a required reading in my classes as well. So those are the two places that I would start looking.
Well, thank you very much. For your information, there's a wonderful consultant group called Rabin Associates in New York that I worked with on endowment issues, and they've taken some pro bono work as well with a couple of nonprofits. The person there is Kim Hawkins, R-A-Y-B-I-N, Rabin Associates, New York. And I recommend you Twitter her, or, you know, she's a terrific resource for bigger, not, you know, universities, colleges, all kinds of things. Okay. Yeah.
Excellent. Appreciate that, Bill. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Judith has the Schaefer spellings of the two. The first, there was S-C-H-A-F-F-E-R, and the Tao of Twitter is Mark Schaefer, S-C-H-A-E-F-E-R.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. So there you have it, Bill. Steve in Appleton, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Steve.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. My question is how, in with Facebook and what's an appropriate age for that? A friend of mine had their two young daughters are 10, and she put them on initially, and then she took them off. My concerns and others, I feel that the content, even if it's a closed network, the content's still inappropriate. Mm-hmm. They could still look at pictures. What's your thought on that?
Well, the age limit is supposed to be 13. That's the Facebook standard. You're not supposed to have an account 13 or if you're younger than 13 years old. A lot of it depends on, you know, like with any child, the maturity of the child. But I've been working with this with my oldest daughter, is trying to cue them in to the fact that, you know, it's not so much that it's how you're going to use it. It's what's out there. Like you're implying, is that, you know, you might see mm-hmm. some things that you didn't intend to find, and there might be conversations going on, with language usage or topics that you don't feel comfortable with. So I still, you know, well, if there is any interaction, none of my children are using it. They're still on the younger side. When they're sitting with me and I'm using it, you know, trying to educate them to, you know, what to be aware of. I mean, the reality is that there are things you need to be careful of, and I think it's our job as parents or teachers or role models to help educate them on how to protect themselves.
Steve, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We had a couple of interesting comments from Facebook. One from, let's see. Someone, I was getting her name here, from Meredith. I quit Facebook in November of last year. I've had many weird looks and questions. Are you on Facebook? And I say no, but honestly, it's been the best thing I've ever done. I get more done. I'm more attentive to my friends and family when around them. And most importantly, I'm not dealing with the drama and privacy of the world of Facebook. There is more to life than Facebook. I see people now with their faces glued to their phones and computers on Facebook, and I shake my head.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost 24 now, and I look back on all the time I wasted on Facebook since the age of 16.
Yeah.
And I wish I could have it all back.
That's something that happens to a lot of us when we go through that age range, though. Is like, no, if I only would. But I compliment you on that. That, you know, a lot of times it can be a huge time sink, and television is very much the same way for a lot of people. Which is why I don't have TV, because I would end up flipping through channels. It's terrible when I go to a hotel and I'm sitting. But absolutely, there is more to life than Facebook, and thank you for sharing that.
And Linda, just a quick, she found Facebook an ideal way to organize a benefit for a 3-year-old girl with leukemia. So there's some good positive uses.
Oh, absolutely.
And Don, what's your website for your...
It's 3rhinomedia.com, the number 3rhinomedia.com.
3rhinomedia.com. If you're interested in looking more into what Don's doing, of course we'll have him back and we will do this again. Tomorrow, Garden Talk, my goodness, Brian Huddleston and Lisa Johnson will be with us to answer all of your gardening questions. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.